Wherever you are from, we are coming to you from the west coast of Sweden. Our website, where you can read, see, and hear more, is redeyescreations.com. We have Gerald Salente with us today. He's an American pioneer trend strategist who observes and analyzes the current events, forming future trends for what they are. He's an author, business consultant, and publisher of the Trends Journal, which forecasts and analyzes business, socio-economic, political, and other trends. Salente describes himself as a political atheist, unencumbered by political dogma, rigid ideology, or conventional wisdom. His motto is "Think for yourself." He is with us today to discuss the 2012 presidential election aftermath in the USA, including the decline of the US and the EU. Gerald says the only way out of this system is not to support it. He also shares the trends that he sees for the next 4 years in America. All right. Welcome, Mr. Salente. Thank you for coming on the program. Good to have you with us. Thank you for taking some time off, of course, in your busy schedule talking with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for asking me on.
Definitely. Now, where to begin? So many things to discuss, of course. But tell us, Gerald, from your perspective, what happened in America last Tuesday?
Nothing. It was business as usual. Another election of voting for a lesser of two evils. It was a race between a stuffed shirt Mitt Romney, the cat couldn't have been more stiffer, and a empty suit Obama, who knows how to say the right things and delivers nothing, or backtracks on what he promised. So it's just like the rest of the world, you know, the rest of the so-called democratic world, you know, whether it's in Italy or Spain or Portugal or Greece, you name the country, Germany. It's they pretend to have democracies, but they're really run and controlled by two parties. And the two parties are really just a two-headed one-party system. They look different, but they act alike.
People haven't gotten smart to this yet, huh, after all these years?
People eat McDonald's. They think that, Coke and Pepsi are, you know, good for them to drink. I mean, come on, you know, people watch junk TV. They listen to junk news. They watch junk entertainment, listen to junk music. So the mind and the heart experience junk thoughts and junk emotions. And unfortunately, too many people do that. But the good news in America is that 11 million people voted less this time than the last time. And I was one of them. This is the first time in my life I didn't vote. I won't be a part of a lesser of two evils. Whether evil is evil, lesser or greater. And I'm a political atheist. I don't believe in anybody's political religion. I don't bow to political gods. And matter of fact, the God that I believe in, I believe, would believe it was a sin to vote for an evil. So a lot of people didn't vote, and there's something else going on. A big secessionist movement. Many states have signed petitions to leave the nation. This is unprecedented. But we predicted it. It's in our top trends for 2012. Each year we put out a top list of what the big trends are going to be. And one of them was secession movement. And so a lot of, the reality is you can see how the world is reacting to the Obama victory. Since Election Day last week, the Dow has dropped over 450 points, and the world equity markets have lost some $1 trillion in value. So the thing with Obama's victory is that people know what to expect, and it's just expecting more of the same, and more of the same was nothing. Had Romney won, however, the people would have believed, let's give him a chance. You know, he was a businessman.
Sure.
Let's give him an opportunity. So we don't have to go through that charade. And that's why it's collapsing the way it is right now.
Yeah, indeed. It's like a rerun of the George Bush scenario that we had last time, basically. And so, and some people that I heard argued, well, it's better because then, as you said, people don't want to have to like take 2 years off to try to figure out if their run is good and good or bad, you know. And in this case, Obama will, this will just keep going. And do you think more people will wake up to this then and realize what really is going on because of it?
Look what's going on in Europe. I mean, my God. You know, look at the Portuguese. Look at the Greeks. Look at the Spanish. They voted in these governments. The people voted in the governments. It's almost like they're either into S&M or they're into the Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah.
You know, where you get to love your torturer. So it's something in the human spirit that prevents people from standing up, speaking out. Instead, they bow down and they actually follow their leaders. Look at these leaders. It's a cavalcade of clowns. Merkel, Rajoy, you know, one after another. Then you have the technocrat over there in Italy, three-card Monty. That's a joke. Obama, Romney. You know, how about the Three Stooges? You know, so people believe this crap. And there's, I don't know what it is with people that prevents them from allowing politicians to get away with things that they would never let people in their everyday lives get away with. They wouldn't let anybody treat them like the way politicians do. But yet, every time they roll out the red carpet, strike up the band, they salute and stand.
Well, tell us about your strategy in this case. I mean, you advocated to basically stay home, don't vote, you know, during this election. How far do you think that could go before something would happen? I think in your latest trends journal, you talked about if something like 40% didn't turn out, right? It would actually send a message.
That's right. But the people, again, you know, what they do is the liberals, you have a line, conservatives believe and liberals lie. Conservatives believe, for instance, you know, we got to kill them Muslims over there before they come over here. I mean, they believe stupid things like that. They believe that you have to invade foreign countries so that you're protected. They actually believe it. Liberals, on the other hand, you tell them, hey, you know, Obama promised to close Guantanamo Bay the first day he came in. Place is still open. You know, Obama took our rights away with the National Defense Authorization Act that he signed on New Year's Eve that allows the government to kill anybody they want without any charges, without any judge, jury, without any lawyer. Obama's sending predator drones and killing people virtually every day around the world. Started the Nobel Peace Prize winner, started a war in Libya, called it a humanitarian mission. And you go on down the list. He promised not to continue Bush tax cuts, and he did. He promised to clean up Washington and brought in, as defense secretary and head of national security, Bush's old holdovers and all of Clinton's crew. So you point it out to them, and then they say, well, you know, he's for women's rights, or he's for gay rights. Yeah, Hitler liked animals, big deal. You know, so they take this one issue, And they'll support them. And when I say the liberals lie, is because they're intelligent enough to know the truth. But they don't have the courage to admit that they've been conned. And to me, those are the people, whether it's in the United States and Germany, whether it's in Sweden or Norway, whether it's in Spain or Italy, wherever it is, those are the people to me that are holding back progress because they know the truth, but they don't have the courage to face it.
Yeah. Now, the two-party system, I've always been kind of wary of what might be next here, the so-called third choice, the blend between the two, because Europe has started to go in this direction. We had this center-right, center-left kind of blocks right now, and they're becoming more and more of the same, and eventually it's going to be just the one party, the one thing you can vote for. What's the danger that you see in that kind of system, and do you think that could happen in America too?
Well, it's happened. There's no difference between the parties. They both get you to send you to war. Look at all the wonderful wars that Bill Clinton started. you know, the one in Yugoslavia. Well, that was a real beauty, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And how about bombing Iraq virtually on a daily basis and people forgot to no-fly zones? You know, he's a mass murderer supreme. You know, people forget that. They asked his Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, when they put sanctions on Iraq during the Clinton years, they asked her, the UN estimated 500,000 Iraqi children died because of sanctions. They couldn't get medicine or food. And they asked Madeleine Albright, was the price of sanctions worth the price of those lives? And she said, yes, it was. These are psychopaths. Matter of fact, when I look at Madeleine Albright, she reminds me of every teacher I hated in school and why I hated school so much. These arrogant people that tell you what you should believe and what to think. To me, the only way out of this is to copy the Swiss model, and that's direct democracy. Let the people vote. We don't have representative forms of government. The only people these people represent are the people that our so-called politicians represent, are the people that give them the most money or have the most power. They don't represent you or me. That's kiddie stuff to believe that. So the direct democracy lets the people vote. You want to go to war, let the people vote. You want to bail out banks, let the people vote. Put it on the ballot. If we could bank online, we could vote online. It's very simple.
It's true. Why not have a digital, I don't know if that's a phrase, democracy, where you vote on more and more issues, maybe even local things. The technology is certainly there, Gerald.
Exactly. And you know what, the prestitutes will pump up? They'll sell the political line saying, well, you know, could be hacked. Could be hacked. Hey, how about this? It took 5 days to count the votes in Florida. You know,
yeah.
And again, if we could move literally trillions of dollars around the globe each day, you'd think we could have a safe voting system? As a matter of fact, it would be perfectly safe, as safe could be, because in a so-called democracy, it would be open up. The transparency would be open up for everyone to look at. So you have all these computer people, the geeks, so to speak, that know the algorithms and what have you, and they could see right away if things were being manipulated. So if we could bank online, we could vote online. Let the people vote. Get what you deserve.
Now, what is the danger, or what was the danger, do you think, with potential vote fraud in this last election here in the U.S.?
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, you look at the lines of people waiting out lines for 4 hours. I mean, you know, it's like a banana republic. It is, actually. And we have El Presidente of Los Estados Unidos, because that's what this country's turned into. I just got back from Munich and Dublin, and I fly into JFK. It's like flying into a third world. And you look at the infrastructure. You hear about all this Hurricane Sandy stuff.
Sure.
We have no breakwaters. We have no sea walls. You don't have floodgates on the tunnels. Anybody that lives in New York, and I'm a New Yorker. I live upstate, but I'm a Bronx New Yorker by birth and lived there most of my life in the city area. And no one ever buys an automobile that's owned by a New Yorker because of the potholes everywhere. You have the front ends are destroyed. The country's falling apart. They estimate that it's going to cost $13 trillion just to repair the infrastructure, not to improve it, to repair it. So this is a nation in decline. And as you see what's going on with the scandals, it's a riot. They have a sex scandal with this CIA director, Petraeus, former general of Afghanistan in
Iraq. That's right, yeah.
And you know, you get caught screwing a chick, it's a big deal. But screw millions of people out of their lives, screw the soldiers who you're supposed to be protecting, you know, screw up entire countries, and they give you a bunch of medals to wear on your chest, the hypocrisy. But the point that I'm making is that this is a militaristic nation. You know, these politicians keep talking about our founding fathers, you know, Washington, Jefferson. Our founding fathers made it 100% clear. You don't get involved in foreign entanglements. This is not a democracy in America. It's fascism. It's a takeover. Obamacare, that program of his, it's doing business with the major insurance companies. They put it all in the privatization of the major insurance companies. We bail out banks like you do over there in Europe. Private banks make bad bets and the public are forced to bail them out. They call it austerity measures.
Yeah.
Mussolini called it the merger of state and corporate powers, called fascism. But nobody wants to call a spade. It's a global takeover. The banks have taken over. That's the new world order. It's in front of everybody.
Well, on that point, we hear so many times as well that America is doing this and America is doing that, and they are responsible for the wars and everything else. But in your view, Gerald, is there somebody else in control of the country taking it that way who doesn't have the nation's best interests at heart?
No, I just think these are psychopaths. You look at the people that got us into the Libyan war. It was well reported. It was Samantha Powers with the National Security Agency, with the Susan Rice, the UN representative, and Hillary Clinton, you know, the war hawk. You know, she comes from a long line of them with her old man. And then you look at what's going on. Listen to that fat mouth he got over there, Rasmussen, the head of NATO, talking about how, you know, we have to support Turkey because Syria may use chemical weapons. And if they use chemical weapons and Turkey's drawn into this, Turkey's a NATO ally and we must defend them. Yeah, but you won't let Turkey into the European Union. These are sick people. You know what I believe? You know, when I look at this thing, this Pussygate that's going on, you had Watergate, Nannygate, and now we got Pussygate. You had the Pussy Riot, the Pussy, what was it in Russia?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Pussy
Riot. I know what you're talking about.
Pussygate with Petraeus. These guys, you know what their Viagra is? These Rasmussens, these little men that talk tough. Their Viagra is killing people. That's right. That's who they are. They're psychopaths. And people don't want to call them who they are. You knew these guys when you were in high school and college. And now they're ruling the world. They wanted to be class president, head of the student council. And the guys like the rest of these generals, et cetera, these are the guys that, you know, joined the military.
Well, the scum rise to the surface, as Charlotte Isabit Sanz said. Now, participation versus no participation. You're advocating no, don't vote, don't be, you know, part of it in that way. But ultimately, how much responsibility do people actually have who are allowing this ultimately to happen? Should we get involved? Should we get out there and try to stop them? What do you advocate?
No, I don't advocate that we try to stop it through their systems. I was an assistant to the Secretary of the New York State Senate. I used to run political campaigns in Westchester County, New York, the richest county in the United States. For 6 years, I was the government affairs specialist in D.C. They used to put political action committees together for the chemical industry. One of our chief writers of the Trends Journal, Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, was the former assistant treasury secretary under Ronald Reagan. You know, my guys know what it looks like. The system's totally corrupt. The system has to change. And to me, it's not participating in a corrupt system, it's changing the system. And to me, the system has to be direct democracy. And that's why I went to Ireland. The Irish are doing it. They really have a strong movement going. And they've had it. I was there a year and a half ago. And then when I just returned, I was shocked by all of the for sale and to let signs that were everywhere, everywhere you looked.
Yeah.
And so the people are, you know, why are people letting these stooges run their lives? That's what puzzles me so much.
Indeed. Let's go back to a secession again and talk about how realistic that might be and how far that could go. And I can't help to wonder and think about repeating history over there in America with possibly even, again, civil war of trying to keep the union in place. What's the possible scenario, do you think?
That's very possible. It could be done. You know, it doesn't have to be a civil war of violence. It could be a very civil war with the very true meaning of the word civil. Look what happened with the former Soviet Union. It was too big to rule by the Kremlin. The United States is 312 million people. It can't be ruled by a bunch of dictators coming out of D.C. 535 representatives, congressmen and senators telling 312 million people how to tie their shoes? I mean, come on. You can't make this crap up. So break it up. There's nothing. Look, you think Al-Qaeda is going to attack Vermont? I mean, you know, who cares? It'll be better. It'll break up the militarism. There's nothing to be fear. Now, you know, I wrote about this before it happened. Read my book Trends 2000 that I wrote in 1996. I warned that when Americans woke up in the new millennium, it'd be terror. It had to do with foreign policy. But you weren't allowed to say that. They hate us because they hate our freedom and liberty, little boys and girls. That's what President Bush said, and the people believed it. They put out their yellow ribbons and flags on their cars. So what I'm saying is secessionism could happen very easily, very effectively, and very economically, and very productively. If you want to live in a state where they don't want to give abortions, move there. It's your choice. If you want to live in a state that wants to execute people, move there. It's your choice. If you want to move to another state where they don't do that, move. Go any way you want. Open borders.
Well, see, that's a good point. I mean, I used to enjoy that, too, being in Europe, the differences between the countries, the fact that you could, you know, literally get like a cultural different experience by moving a couple of meters from France into Germany, for example, or something like that. But today there's homogenization going on. It's all becoming the same wherever you go. It's incredibly boring to me.
It is. It's very sad as well.
How do you think that we prevent this from constantly happening? Obviously, looking back into history, we see the same empire building happening over and over and over again. These attempts is our history, pretty much. Is there any way, in your opinion, to prevent this from happening?
It comes down to the individual. That's what, after doing this for 32 years, that's my conclusion. When enough individuals, you know, everybody is born with unique gifts, everyone. And to me, again, only speaking for myself, and everything I say, by the way, is only speaking for myself. I don't tell people what to believe or how to think. As my dear father, may his soul rest in peace, used to say to me, anytime I would repeat anything that everyone else was saying, he'd say to me, Papagallo, parrot, stop repeating what other people are saying and think for yourself. So I'm just thinking, I'm just saying this is the way I see things. And the way I see it is that by bringing that unique gift that you have to its higher level, that is, to me, living a fulfilling life. And when enough people live fulfilling lives, they have courage and dignity and respect and integrity and passion, and they don't take BS from morons, and they raise the bar. They don't settle for less. They don't settle for mediocrity. They want better. They want higher quality in everything because they've worked so hard to reach quality within themselves. And isn't that what a Renaissance is part of? You know, look what Europe was decimated by the Renaissance. They estimated 60% of the people were eliminated through the Black Plague. What followed at a Renaissance? The people realized what they were doing was destructive. But the people that realized it were the ones that were off in monasteries and convents, etc., not because of the religious experience, but because of the spiritual and health experience and the quietude of understanding what was going on. And so it was a rebirth. And I believe we could have a rebirth. Why not? Why does it have to go in the direction that they are taking us? I believe that it's the 20% solution. 20% of the people decide they want another course. The rest will follow.
Still that many, huh? 20% is quite a bit.
Yeah. It's quite a bit, but it doesn't start with 20%. You know, it starts with the individual.
Yeah.
It builds.
Well, that's one another point here I wanted to ask you a little bit about as well. There have to be an infrastructure for the individual to exist. And today everything seems to be geared towards, well, it's collectivism for the plebs, if I can put it that way, and for the elite. They're turning the globe into a theme park for themselves, it seems like. But when that infrastructure is eroded for the individual, then there's no room for the individual to blossom, if you will, to come up with the ideas, to be creative, or to have the solutions on that individual level.
Oh, you're 100% right. You know, they have taken away the individuality, and it's been homogenized, and that's a sad thing, as I see in Europe too. It's all becoming one, And the bigs have taken over everything. So I don't know what, you know, I don't know the answer other than what I've said, is that when enough individuals change, then the direction changes. And look what they did in Germany, for example. They prohibited, they didn't prohibit, the people boycotted Walmart when Walmart went there. So that's the kind of thing that's needed, is that you don't go to the chains. You don't go to the, Starbucks. You support local. You buy Swedish. You buy Italian. Wherever you are, you support your country. Put up the trade barriers that used to exist. Kill the euro. Well, the euro did was it was a great game for the multinationals. And the older people in Europe went for it because they thought, hey, if we all have one currency, we won't go through two horrible wars, which was, you know, a logical conclusion from people who, you know, suffered from it. So, you know, it's but those are the kind of things to do. You know, the first step is kill the euro, bring back national identity, not nationalism, but national identity.
You know, I'm always looking at the ESM, your European Stability Mechanism, that they're bringing in this horrible thing, the debt prism that they're going to put Europe in right now. Many people have been talking about the complete collapse of the euro, but the longer we go in it, the more I see that it's not going to happen, it seems like. It's not that it's stronger and strengthening, but the fact is that things are so bad right now in the eurozone that if people don't, or if nations don't get out now, they never will have any other bigger reason to do it. So I see this ultimately, unfortunately, as a kind of a strengthening process, if you will, of the eurozone. What do you think about that, Gerald?
No, because they're not going to be able to solve anything. They just keep putting more and more pressure on the people to bail out the banks. Look what's going on as we speak. There are mass demonstrations going on throughout Europe. So, you know, the people, they're not going to be, what do you have? You got a jerk like Barroso over there with the European Union? Who was this guy before he got this job? Oh, I remember him. He was the Prime Minister of Portugal. Hey, great job you did there, Jocko. And now you're going to fix this? These guys are losers. Everything they do, they turn to crap. They're not going to fix it. Things are going to get worse. Tensions are going to increase. And the euro is going to come under more pressure. So I think that it's best to get out before it gets worse.
Indeed. Now, let's talk a little bit more about where you see some of this is going here in the next, I guess, 4 years for America, if it even matters. We're back to that point again. The lesser of two evils was the option. Would it have made any difference? Is this going to be? How deep is this abyss going to take us? Do you think, in America, especially the next 4 years, Gerald?
The next four, you can see it unfolding already. The world equity markets are voting with their dollars and their euros and their yens and their yuans. And they're saying that they have no trust in the financial system. Look what's going on in Europe with the sovereign debt crisis. It just keeps getting worse. So we can see the future. It's already the tea leaves, the cards, whatever you like to call them. They're in front of everybody to read, should they choose to read them. The first great war of the 21st century has begun. There's civil war in Syria. There's civil war in Libya. There's war in Yemen, in Bahrain. Destabilization in Tunisia and Egypt. There are, again, millions of people taking to the streets throughout different countries in Europe. You know, one of the models to look to, by the way, that I find very interesting is the five-star movement over there in Italy, being led by Beppe Grillo. I love what he calls Berlusconi, psycho dwarf. I mean, that's what all of these, you know, that label fits to me, most of them. These leaders, they're psycho dwarfs at different levels. So what's going on with the five-star movement to me is very, very much a model for other countries to look at. You know, are there going to be anti-immigration movements? Of course there are. And it's not as though you're a right winger or a fanatic. You know, I mean, look what's going on in the States. I mean, the country's being flooded with immigrants coming out of South America.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, and you look at the data, it's coming out all the time. They're uneducated. They're not going to college. They're barely finishing high school. And we're a country with rising unemployment and no jobs. And it's putting pressure on the infrastructure in many different ways. If you can't afford to take care of who you have, I mean, do you really open the borders to everybody? Do you open your house to everybody if you can't feed your family? And that's all we're talking about. So, yes, there's going to be legitimate reasons, of course, but then they're going to turn it into, you know, a Golden Dawn kind of thing that you have going on in Greece. But again, who am I to criticize? You know, look what happened in Greece, and look why it's happened as well. You know, how many Afghans and Iraqis are in Greece trying to escape the terror that the United States and NATO has wrought down on them? So where do they flee to? And now they got to get them out of there. Yeah, I was in Munich 2 weeks ago. And, you know, I've chatted up with every cab driver I can, you know, that has enough English to speak. And I said to this guy, where are you from? He said, Afghanistan. I said, how do you like it in Munich? He said, it's safe. It's safe. How do you like it in Syria? How do you like it in Libya? How do you like it in Egypt? How do you like it in Iraq? How do you like it in Afghanistan? How do you like it in Bahrain and Yemen? People have no clue. You know, I could solve every war from beginning. I could stop it tomorrow. Hey, Rasmussen, you want to go to war? Get out of your pretty uniform and get in the trench. You want to take out Assad? We'll put it on pay-per-view. You against Assad. The world leader face-off, and the rest of them, Merkel, Rajoy, Obama. Could you imagine that little wanker Cameron fighting anybody? That guy couldn't fight his way out of an Eaton stamped paper bag. You want to go take out Assad? Take him out. We'll put it on pay-per-view. Billions of people could tune in. We'll balance the budgets around the world. Everybody would love to see it.
Yeah, it's true, huh? The king leading the people into battle. That was the good old days, that. It's not going to happen now.
Exactly. You know. And I mean this, and this isn't a joke. This is not a joke. I mean this. You want to know what the people could do? They could demand it. Any fat mouth out there that wants to go fight, listen, I'm a close combat instructor. I know what it is to fight. These guys are all mouth. That's all. You want to go get other people killed, you go first.
Yeah.
And I mean this. No, you ask me what people can do? Demand that the leaders face off against each other in a battle. Rather than sending Jose Gonzalez, Tammy White, Mike Smith, unnamed people to get their brains blown out and legs blown off. You want to go to war, go to war. Leave me out of your psycho trip. And that goes to everybody else out there, the citizens that want to support war. There's a job for you on the front.
Yeah.
Send your wife, send your kids, send yourself, and send your money. Keep me out of your psycho trip.
Yeah, well, you said it. I mean, ultimately, that's what is the problem. People's participation in things that they might or might not agree with and who might not even understand what they are part of, ultimately. But the fact is, if the soldiers didn't show up on the battlefield, there wouldn't be any war.
These are kids. They don't know. Think of when you were a kid, 17, 18, 19 years old. Look at the propaganda they're feeding down, particularly these Hispanic kids, and getting them to join. They have whole programs brainwashing them. They don't know any better. They're kids.
Yeah, I know. Ultimately, let's go back to this point, Gerald, before we begin to wrap things up here for this time. although there's very, as we talked about here, very, very dark times that we are in, going back to that idea that you mentioned about the Renaissance and the fact that it was after such a very, very dark point that things began to turn again. Is that what's possible? Is that what we can have to look forward to? Obviously, the ground, the work has to be done. We can't just sit on our ass and think it's going to happen by itself, of course. But when times are as bad as they are now, hopefully we can just go up from there. What do you think?
I think there was a quote by Einstein. He said something about the leading by example isn't one way to teach. It's the only way to teach. And I try to do it by example. My offices are beautiful. I have art hanging everywhere. Beautiful music playing all the time when we can. You know, when we're not working, writing. You know, I don't like music when I'm writing. The place is gorgeous, and I dress well, I eat well, I try to live a Renaissance life. I'm interested in many different things, but everything I'm interested in about it has a foundation in quality. And quality is not, you know, subjective. You know, there's fine glassware and there's paper cups. There's linen napkins and there are paper napkins. You know, there's fine coffees and they're crummy coffees. You know, it goes on down the line.
Yeah.
So it's not a subjective analysis. It's objective. So I try to do it by example. And I just, you know, had a discussion with one of the young fellows that works here. You know, and I said, look, I said, you know, stop coming and dress like this. And I said, I want you to, you know, dress up sharp. You're a young, handsome guy. You know, look sharp. I love that. By the way, I love this term they come up with, hipsters. These cats ain't hip, man. Like, I've been around a while. You know, a pair of jeans and 3 days growth and a plaid shirt ain't hip jack, you know. And so, you know, step it up. Start with yourself. And by the way, we get letters every day. Every day we get letters thanking us. And one I got yesterday, I read it in the Trends in the News feature. We do Trends in the News each day. And a guy thanked me for waking him up, and that he said how he's going through very difficult financial times. And he said, I realize what you said, even though you're going through bad financial times, you know, you could still dress up. I'm not talking about going out and buying, you know, Hugo Boss. You can, matter of fact, you can go to a thrift shop and get Hugo Boss and buy it for practically nothing. And it's just grooming well, eating well. And I meditate every day. And, you know, I'm just a regular guy. I mean, I have my ups and downs in life, but I try my very best to do my best. And as you mentioned, you know, it takes work. You don't learn how to become a great pianist without practicing.
Sure, yeah.
You don't become great at anything without practicing, whether it's cooking, whether it's cleaning, whatever job you're doing, you do it the best you can. But the most important thing to me is that every one of us has that unique gift, that one thing that makes us different than everybody else, our secret weapon. And to really hone that secret weapon to the highest level it can be brought to, and that to me will change the future. Nothing else. And if anybody says that you don't create the future, they're trying to, again, is the way I see it, they're trying to rob you of your dignity, the sanctity of your soul and the God that lives within you, or whatever God you believe in. So, you know, you create the future. If you let somebody else create the future, guess what? They're not going to like it, not if they create it for you. As a matter of fact, I believe it's a sin of life if you let someone else create your future.
Well, okay, let's wrap things up on this point here. Appearance, in a sense, then you have to act successfully, maybe to become or be successful. It's about a mind thing first, basically. I mean, and in that example, look at a government office, let's say, walk into one here in Sweden or anywhere in Europe for that matter, and you see the loveliness of those offices, the emanation. You know, they have to play it down to give out the perception that they are poor, that they don't have any money, because if they did, people would start wondering. So they focus on lack, and it's a sense of despair that just comes out of those offices, you know, as you said, comparing it to the environment that you'd rather be in, Gerald. And in this case, that's what happens here. They focus so much on the lack that when the people walk in there, they're literally drained of the energy afterwards, and they feel like, things are in a rut, it's really bad. And do you think that this ever could change from the point of view of government? They actually could begin to focus instead of prosperity?
It's the very nature of the corrupt system. You know, why can you call a thief a thief, a murderer a murderer, a whore a whore, but you can't call a politician a thief, a murderer, or a prostitute, or all three? That's what they are. That's why they do this.
Yeah.
So why should anybody expect anything different?
That's true. That's true. Gerald, let's wrap things up here talking about the Transjournal a little bit, and I want to give you an opportunity to mention what you can and tell people about the paper, the magazine that you put out.
Well, the last one was 48 pages, advertising free, great illustrations by a world-renowned illustrator, Anthony Frieda. And it really covers the world. It shows you history before it happens. You look at the elections, for example, in the United States. We spell them out in chapter and verse, why Obama would win as far back as October 3rd, 2011. We talked earlier about the secessionist movements going on. It was a top trend of 2012. You want to know what's going on in Italy, in Greece, in Syria, in Egypt, in Libya? We wrote about it all long before it happened. The Trends Journal is there to prepare people for the future. If you can see the future coming, and nobody can predict it, it always, you know, it's too many wild cards, you can prepare for it. And that's what the Trends Journal does. It gives you history before it happens, allows you to prepare for what's coming ahead so you can make plans. For example, you go to our website, trendsjournal.com, go to the forecast page. Their forecasts are there. They're written in stone. Or the videos where I've said it on TV or radio or in the newspapers where we predicted that gold prices would escalate beginning in 2001. I call the beginning of the gold bull run. One after another. We said that there'd be the euro crisis before the euro came online. I said it would fail. So that's what the Trends Journal does. It shows you the future so you can make plans to seize on the opportunities and avoid the dangers.
All right, very good. Excellent. Check out trendsjournal.com to find out more, of course. Thank you for your time today, Gerald. Really appreciate it. And thank you for sharing your thoughts and opinion about all the madness out there.
And thank you for all that you're doing as well. Bye-bye.
We have more radio programs for you to enjoy and learn new things from, over a year of shows in our archives. No commercial interruptions? I'm sure you'll find both intriguing and controversial subjects to dig further into. We'll be back in just a few days with John Lash next. This is his final interview of this kind, so you shouldn't miss it. Thought-provoking and very important. After this, we have Richard Allen Miller, Johan Oldenkamp, G. Edward Griffin, and David Talbot, to name a few. You have links with further information about our guests in our radio archive. Our website, where you can go to find out more, is redicecreations.com. And then we have redicemembers.com for our subscribers when you want to have full access to our entire archive. Talk to you soon. Thank you for listening, and take good care.